Breadbox Media Programming is brought to you by... Finding someone who shares your values in today's culture isn't easy, and being single around the holidays isn't easy either. That's why Catholic Singles created a website and app where single Catholics can meet and get to know each other that focuses on values, activities, and interests. For over two decades, Catholic Singles has been fostering deep relationships because your faith matters. Start today at CatholicSingles.com. That's CatholicSingles.com.
Ignatius Press is pleased to announce the first national book club created for Catholic schools. Ignatius Book Club for Catholic Schools was launched to support Catholic schools' dedication to forming the whole child, mind, body, and spirit. Ignatius Book Club for Schools partnered with leading publishers of children's literature to offer the best books and educational materials for all reading levels and interests. Head to ignatiusbookclub.com/podcast and find wholesome books that delight, inspire, and enrich.
Hey, good evening. Welcome to Beneath the Surface, where faith and reason meet. Here at WCAP Radio 980 on your dial, we are here Monday nights, every Monday night from 10 to 11 p.m., delving beneath the surface on a topic important to you, bringing a little sanity into our age of insanity, a little life into our culture of death. Welcome again, ladies and gentlemen. Glad you could join us tonight. For those of you here in the East Coast, my condolences as I share your heartbreak as the Boston Red Sox end their season tonight on a sour note. But I'm sure that you appreciate their season as well as the end of Big Poppy. And we congratulate Tito Francona, too, for getting his, I suppose, his professional revenge on the Red Sox. Anyway, glad you could join us again. My in-studio guest is Mr. Bob LeBlanc, not to be confused with Bob LeBlanc that has a show on Saturday morning.
Yes, I'm a different guy.
That you are, even though you are the one and only Bob LeBlanc.
I would like to think
in,
so,
in the personage of you.
In the personage of me and as well as beneath the surface.
Absolutely. Well, tonight, my fellow truth seekers, we have a special treat for you. Tonight we go beneath the surface on a topic, on the topic of evolution and faith. And we will be joined by an expert in the fields of both biology and theology, Father, and I may be wrecking his name a little bit, but Father Nicanor Ostriaco, who has both a PhD and an STD, two doctorate degrees, I assume one in each field. So we'll be getting to know Father Nicanor as soon as he calls in, which should be in a couple of minutes. And some of the things that we'll ask, the more general basic questions are faith and science compatible? What about human reason and divine revelation? And how are we to reconcile biblical accounts of creation with scientific evolution? Are there any contradictions? And again, tonight, to act as my co-host, he's usually my guest, is Mr. Bob LeBlanc, and our call-in number, if you want to get involved in our conversation here at BTS Radio, it's 978-454-4980. That's 978-454-4980. And so keep that in mind as we go along, our fascinating conversation tonight on the topic of evolution. And or you can simply jot down your thoughts at facebook.com/fellowtruthseekers. All right, Mr. Bob, co-host for the evening.
Hey.
It looks like we have our call-in guest
yes.
on the line. So let us bring him up right now.
Sure thing.
Okay. Father, welcome to Beneath the Surface.
Thank you very much. It's great to be on your show.
Oh, it's great to have you. Now, Could you say your name so that I don't destroy it again?
Okay. It's Father Nicanor Ostriaco.
Okay. And what do you like to go by?
Everyone in my lab calls me Father Nick.
Okay. Then I guess we'll be in your lab tonight, metaphorically.
Okay, cool.
Father Nick, welcome to the show. Now, Father,
thank you.
Just to give my audience a couple of your credentials, I know you have a lot of them. Your doctorate degrees?
Yes, so I'm a Dominican friar, a Dominican priest, and I'm professor of biology and theology at Providence College.
Great.
I earned my PhD in biology from MIT, and I also earned a doctorate in moral theology from the University of Fribourg. Dominicans are geeks for God, so we study for the Lord so that we can discern his truth and help preach it for the salvation of souls.
Wow, when I grow up, I want to be a geek just like you.
Now, when I was a kid, I would never have guessed this is what I would end up doing, and I'm so grateful to God for calling me to this life. So,
wow.
You know, he's always full of surprises.
That's awesome. Now, the gentleman who got you caught up in our show tonight, he contacted you as Mr. Bob LeBlanc. Bob, why don't you say hello to Father?
Hi, Father. Nice
Hi,
meeting
Bob.
You.
Nice to meet you.
Nice to meet you.
Nice to meet you on the air.
On the air, yes.
All right. This is such a fascinating conversation we're about to have. Let me start off with the most general of questions, and then we'll just sort of go further and further beneath the surface from there.
Okay.
The two terms that we're dealing with tonight, evolution and revelation.
That's correct.
So tell me how, generally, how would you define the term evolution? Is it simply change?
So evolution describes the way through which God created the world, and he created life, and he created through evolution, and it's a process of change over time where populations of organisms were selected for in divine providence such that one population was more favored to survive than another.
Is that different than natural selection?
No, that pretty much is. So natural selection is the technical term for the process I just described.
Okay.
So natural selection occurs when you have a population of organisms, say a group of elephants, and some of them survive better than the others. And one of the things as a theologian, especially as a Dominican theologian, in the tradition of the great medieval scholastic theologian and philosopher, St. Thomas Aquinas, is one of the things I have to make very clear is that creation and evolution are not opposed. So
right.
God creates through evolution, and people don't often figure that out. They often think that creation and evolution are opposed and that you have to hold one rather than the other.
Yeah.
And St. Thomas, even though he lived 800 years ago, in his philosophical reflections on how God works in the world can show us how we can say that without contradiction, that God can create through evolution.
Excellent. So before I get into the notion of divine revelation, so basically what you're saying is with the mechanism of natural selection, God creates a certain environment for the world that would favor the survival of certain species or individuals within a species.
So, I mean, one of the questions that I often get in my classroom is the following. Why did God choose to create through evolution? Why didn't he just create in the way that people assume special creation happened? So why didn't he just create all of the living things all at once as the Bible seems to suggest he did? And yet, as St. Augustine already recognized, if you read the Bible really carefully, you see that it's not exactly that way. And so St. Thomas will provide several reasons why God may have chosen to create through evolution. One is, he says, and this is really fascinating, he says, look, when he creates, he has to create a lot of things. And the reason why he creates a lot of things is because each of the things he creates reflects a little bit of his glory. And since he is beyond description and his glory can never be completely encompassed, by any one thing or any many things. The more things he creates, the better it is for him to reveal his glory. And when I explain this in class, I put it this way. If you wanted to understand a painter, it is better for you to have a gallery of paintings, to walk into this amazing gallery with 200 different paintings that each in their own way reflect the brilliance and insight of the painter. A few is not as good as many. And as I point out that, you know, there are only something like 7 or 8 million species present today, but over the course of 3.5 billion years, the Lord was able to make many, many, many more. So, I mean, all the dinosaurs. And people say, well, why didn't you just make the dinosaurs exist today? And I said, well, you can't put a T-Rex and an elephant together. One's going to die, and it's pretty much the elephant. So the reptiles and the mammals, we couldn't live at the same time, you see. So what God did in his amazing providence is that he created the reptiles first, and they had their day, and they revealed his glory. And then when in his providence, the time came for mammals, mammals showed up, and then he guided evolution so that we were the perfection, the epitome of evolution in this world. And I find that an incredibly beautiful picture, as St. Thomas would have us think about it.
Very good. So let's get into then how divine revelation might work with this idea that you just laid out.
Okay.
In the book of Genesis, as you know, there are two creation stories. And if we look at the second creation story, we see the story of Adam being created out of the dust of the earth and Eve being created out of Adam. And then, they name the animals, and they eventually fail.
They mess up.
They fail the test that God gave
them.
They
mess up and they fall.
The test of love, and they fall. So, would you say that Christians are meant to read these Genesis stories, and particularly what are called the prehistorical stories of the Bible, Genesis chapters 1 through 11, in more of an allegorical way?
Well, I think I'm going to defer to Pope Benedict XVI. So in his incredibly insightful book, In the Beginning, the Pope points out that there's just not two creation stories. There's several. The wisdom books also have creation narratives. They don't describe creation in a historical A to B to C, a chronological A, B to C, but there are accounts throughout the Old Testament that describe how God creates. And each one of them was written, and God wrote them through a human author. They were written primarily to convey different messages.
Yes.
And I tell my students, look, you know, the Bible is a love letter. It's a love letter from God. And if you were reading a love letter and some wife described her husband as a teddy bear, you wouldn't think that she actually married a grizzly bear. You would know very clearly from the context of the letter that she was speaking about her husband in an endearing way. And one of the things that the Pope Emeritus explains is that we have to use our reason to understand how and why God used these particular authors over the course of basically 1,000 years. Yeah. And what was he trying to say through the book of Genesis? And the Holy Father, in this wonderful series of lectures, which he gave in the cathedral in Munich while he was actually still bishop there, explains and he points out, you know, one of the things we discover when we use our reason is that the author, the sacred author of the book of Genesis, especially the first chapter, was clearly someone who was writing during the Babylonian exile. And his biggest task that God had given to him was to remind the chosen people that all of the Babylonian gods around them, the so-called god, the sun, the sun, the moon, all of these so-called little gods were not really the true God. And so the first book of Genesis is actually a theological statement. It's a reminder to the chosen people, as it's a reminder to us, that the reason why we know that the sun is not God or the moon is not God is because they were all created. And so once you discover that the first chapter of the book of Genesis was not written as a historical text, you know, you have to be able to read it in the way that God had intended to be written. And so that's why Benedict will say, you know, we shouldn't read this like a historical text. We should read it as a theological one.
And the theological points are points like there is only one God. He created.
There is only one God.
He created the entire
universe
out of nothing.
Everything you see.
Out of nothing.
And out of nothing. That's correct.
The old pagan myths had their gods rearranging things. But
exactly.
The book of Genesis had a God create everything out of nothing.
Absolutely. And he is so powerful that the one true God is the explanation for all of these other little pagan gods.
Right.
And that's really the take-home message for the first chapter of Genesis. It's not about counting days.
Right, right. And speaking of days, in the symbolic day number 6, we have the very last thing, the very crowning of his creation, is this thing called mankind.
That's right.
And in Genesis 1, verses 26 to 28, it's the only thing in all of creation that God says, let us make man in our image and likeness.
Image and likeness.
Now that separates him from all the other creatures, doesn't it?
We're special. You know, we're really special. Now, the reason why we're special is that like the angels, which and God created them as well, we are persons.
Yeah.
But we're the only material persons. We are a mixture of spirit and matter. The angels are completely spirit. And we are, you know, we are mud dolls, but he loved us so much that he gives spirit to us.
And that spirit is personhood.
Well, the spirit is what makes us a person, right? We are rational creatures. We have the ability to think and to love. And at the end of the day, that's what persons do. Persons are beings that are capable of knowing and loving. And we are the only material creatures because of our rational intellect that are able to do that. There are also the immaterial, the spiritual creatures, which we call angels, and they too are persons.
And so that this personhood is what reflects our image as God, because he himself is personal.
That's correct. He is a personal God who in his revelation told us that his name is Father, Son, and Spirit. So we understand he is one God, and yet he is three persons in this one God. And that's a mystery that theologians have been trying to explain for 2,000 years. It's one of those things that I'm just going to look forward to seeing myself when I see him face to face. I'm like, wow.
Yeah, I think Saint
that's
Augustine
what
said
the
something.
Father, Son, and Spirit's all about.
I think
it's beyond explanation. You just have to see it.
Absolutely, and there are others in your camp too. I think Saint Augustine said something similar about the Trinity, that he'll probably spend all eternity trying to
he'll just marvel at it.
At the
beauty. You know, God will be the most beautiful thing you have ever seen, and it will never stop.
Father,
you'll just go wow.
We need to take a quick break, Father, but.
Sure.
This was a great foundation for what we're going to talk about for the rest of the hour. So
okay.
Could you hold on a sec?
Sure.
Excellent. You're listening to Beneath the Surface. I'm Paul Morano, your host. We're going to get Bob involved in the conversation when we get back from the break. Our topic tonight, evolution and faith. Stay with us. We'll be right back. And we're back. I usually let that music go a little further, but we have a great show tonight, so I want to get in every word possible tonight. My guest tonight, ladies and gentlemen, is Father Nick from Providence College, a professor of biology, I believe.
And theology.
I have in the studio, my co-host tonight is Mr. Bob LeBlanc. Cindy is behind the glass, and I'm glad you're with us tonight. We're here until 11 o'clock, so if you want to give us a call, join in the convo. It's 978-454-4980. All right, Father Nick, my next general question to you is, the church teaches that we could have evolved bodily materially, but spirit doesn't evolve. It needs to be immediately and directly created by God. Is that the case?
That's absolutely correct. And spirit, by definition, can't evolve because evolution requires changing of parts, and spirits, practically speaking, don't have parts.
Right. It's pure.
So we just spirit. God makes us. Now we can learn, we can grow in grace, and in that way we change, but we don't evolve.
Okay. So then, if that be the case, then at every human being's conception, you have matter being provided by the gametes of the parents, of which could have evolved, you know, throughout the millions of years to be what it is today. And at that moment of conception, God infuses a spiritual soul into that. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Okay. Now
He makes a person.
Now let's take that model and put it to mankind as a species. How, according to evolutionary theory, and particularly perhaps yours in particular, how would God create a human person through this evolutionary process? What would that look like?
So basically, you know, over a long period of time, God guides the evolution of matter through a random process. And this is what people realize, as St. Thomas explains very well. God can work through random processes. He can guide through random processes. And so God guides the evolution of matter over the course of a 3.5 billion year period until that point where he is ready to make us. And we know this happened around 100,000 years ago in a small population of hominins who lived in East Africa. And in one of these individuals, a mutation evolved, some change happened that allowed this new creature to be able to speak. And human language, as soon as the capacity for human language appears, you also have the capacity for human thought and human abstraction. And at that point, he infuses a spiritual soul into this individual. And this happened, you know, we will never really know exactly when it happened. We can only approximate it, but it happens in East Africa or somewhere in Africa around 100,000 years ago, plus or minus several thousand years.
You brought up some very extremely important points. I want to get in a question or two, so it doesn't bob. Number one, for me, how do we know that it's around 100,000? I've heard 200,000. I've heard 500,000. And my second question is, how do we know that language arose right around that time? Do we have artwork? Do we have artifacts?
Okay, so to answer your first question, what we can do is we can look at the genetics, the genome, the DNA of modern people. And by comparing and contrasting them, we can figure how long ago there had to be a common ancestor. Let me explain how this works. So the example I give is, you're a professor, and you get two exams, and you discover that the exams share similar answers. And you go, aha, it must have been cheating. And cheating is an explanation for a common origin. And so now if you have three exams, two of the exams have one answer in common, and the second and the third have 9 out of 10 in common, then one of the things you can do is you can get an approximate time period for who copied first and when did they copy.
Okay.
And so what we do, what biologists are able to do, are they're able to compare the DNA of people from all over the planet, and they can calculate how long ago was it that all of these people who are now living in South America, Australia, Africa, and North America, Europe, how long ago would it have taken to explain how different these DNA sequences are. And so there's an approximation. It's approximately 100,000. And you're correct. There's always going to be some variation. There's some variance because we're not 100% sure of how to calibrate the clock. And so it's like 100,000 plus or minus 50,000. Now, this DNA data also correlates nicely with the paleo, the archaeological and the the fossil record and the just the record of human existence. So that was for question number one. So question number two, one of the things that's really striking is that human beings that looked like us appeared about 200,000 years ago, but human beings that behave like us, that have art, that appear to have jewelry, that appear to be able to make advanced tools, yeah, they don't appear for another 100,000 years to them. And so there are people who propose that there was this incredible change in the architecture of our brains that allowed us to go from creatures that looked like us but couldn't behave like us,
right,
to creatures that looked like us and behave like us.
Which would make them persons, right?
Which would make them – exactly. Okay. And so and I have proposed – I'm still writing this up. I proposed that an essential change that happened from non-persons to persons is the acquisition of the capacity for language.
Yep.
And there is a lot of evidence that language only appeared once. It only appeared in one person, and it probably happened in Africa in a small group of pre-persons.
Interesting.
Wow.
But before I get to your question, Bob, does this mean that you're proposing that God infused a personal soul into one of these hominids, and then this hominid, which the Bible would call Adam, this hominid mated with pre-human hominids?
Well, at this point, science can't tell us anything about that.
Okay.
So there are different options. I mean, I've had people say, it's not unreasonable to think that God could have, just as he described, he would have made Adam and then made Eve really quickly in one generation. That's one possibility.
Okay.
Right? Now, the other possibility is, yes, you have a situation where Adam mates with non-persons. Now, you'll go, isn't that really weird? But even St. Thomas was aware, for example, that in the classical account of Adam and Eve, you had to have incest.
Okay.
Because if Adam and Eve and their kids were the only kids around, then obviously you had an issue because then, daughter and son had to mate, which would have been problematic.
Right.
And so, I think even Aquinas will recognize that the very beginning is complicated. And so I tend not to say, I don't know. I don't know. It's one of the things I'm going to have to ask the Lord when I see him face to face. What exactly happened? And even more important, what did Adam do? How did he mess up?
Yeah.
And all of these things, Revelation tells us it tells us these things happen, but they don't. But Revelation doesn't tell us the details of how it happened.
Right, right. It's not meant to be a history or a science book, but a religious book. Right.
A theological one.
Yes. Bob, what do you got?
Well, Father Nick, you've talked a little bit about evolution, and it seems to me that evolution requires death to operate, I'd like you to address that, but I'd also like you to address the fall bringing about death for mankind and how they might interrelate. I'm not sure how I should ask that question.
Those are excellent questions, and in fact, those questions were asked 800 years ago by St. Thomas and his peers. So I'm going to give you his answer. And his answer is the following. He says, you know what? Before the fall, lions were lions, and lions ate meat.
Yep.
Because a lion that doesn't eat meat isn't a lion. And he said that if we say that before the fall everything was vegetarian, then we would attribute too much power to sin, because then we would say that sin changes nature, and he will never concede that, because he'll say sin is not that powerful. And so he said, before the fall, lions were lions and eagles were eagles, and eagles to be eagles had to kill other things, and lions had to eat sheep or whatever animal that they could get. And so there was death in the world. And he says to say, to deny that is to attribute too much power to sin. But he will also say that for us, when we were created, even though we are naturally mortal because we have matter and spirit, one of the things that God gave us when he made us is he gave us these special gifts. And one of the gifts was immortality. And that gift was the gift that allowed us to keep our matter and our spirit together forever. But when we messed up in the fall and we rejected the giver, we ended up having to reject all the gifts. And so we rejected the gifts, and some of the gifts were amazing. You know, Thomas will talk about the gift of immortality, but he will also talk about the gift of integrity. And integrity is, well, the best way to describe it is to describe it the absence of it. And we describe it, the absence of it, as St. Paul did. He said, you know, there are things that I know I should do that I don't, and there are things that I do that I know I shouldn't do. And that rebellion within, the theological term is called concupiscence, but we all experience as the woundedness within. Integrity was a gift that healed that. And when we rejected God at the very beginning of our species, what happened was we rejected that gift as well, which is why we experience this inner turmoil where what we desire, what we want, doesn't necessarily jive most of the time with what we know we should want and what we know we should get. And so that's how that works. That's how death enters the world. Death enters the world because we had been given a special gift by God at our creation. And when our forebears, our forefathers, rejected that gift, they couldn't give it to us. And so we ended up basically mortal. And my students will say, why didn't God give us that back? Well, I said, well, God's smart. You know, he tried it once, it didn't work. So he sent us something even more amazing, and he sent us his son. And so this is why in the Exultet, the great hymn of the Easter Vigil, we always talk about a happy fall. You know, Adam messed up, and we're sorry he did. But in that messing up, God sent us a more amazing gift, his son, so that we would know him by name. We would know him through his love that he revealed on the cross. And that through his cross and through his power and through his grace, we will not only be redeemed, we will also be transformed, we'll be elevated, we'll be higher than the angels. And at the end of time, we will end up better than we would have been had we not have fallen. This is the great evidence that God can take evil and draw amazing good out of it.
Father,
does that make sense?
Yes, it does, Father, it does.
Are you saying, Father, that if sin had not occurred, the incarnation would not have happened? Is that your stance?
So this is a debate between the Dominicans and the Franciscans.
And you're a Dominican.
And I'm a Dominican. And St. Thomas said, look, if you look at the Bible, there's only one reason why the Bible says the second person became a man. And that was because he came to save us. So he reasoned, if there was no need for saving, he wouldn't have done it.
Hmm.
Now, our Franciscan brothers will say, you know what? No, the incarnation was supposed to reveal God's love. And so God would have become a man no matter what. But this is not explained in the Bible. And so St. Thomas will say, it sounds good, but that's not what God seems to have told us.
Right.
And so he'd rather rely on revelation. And I have a feeling it's one of those things, again, that we will ask the Lord when we see him face to face. And I like what Aquinas says, but I also like what the Franciscans say. So I'm on the fence.
I do, too.
Father, I was wondering if you could probably address. There was an article recently, I saw it in the Boston Pilot, talking about children leaving the faith at 10 years of age, and apparently they seem to think that science is far more rational and faith is not rational. Could you address that?
Yeah, so it's a sad thing to see that many of our young people do not understand that the Catholic faith is a marriage of faith and reason. Now, you can identify many causes for this, I mean, one of them is Hollywood portrays Christian faith as being irrational. You know, and a lot of people will say that faith is believing even against the evidence, and a Catholic could never say that. A Catholic would say that that reason is also a gift from God. And so if reason uncovers a certain truth, it is true. And if faith, if revelation reveals truth, it is also true. And if there's an apparent contradiction, it's only an apparent one. And we have to work mightily through prayer, fasting, and thinking to resolve the discrepancy. Now, one of the things, too, I think just talking to young people is, sadly, many of our CCD programs do not encourage questioning. So young people will ask, you know, their CCD teacher, how do you deal with Adam and Eve? And this is a profoundly difficult question. And because many of our CCD teachers are not able to answer that question, they say, well, you just have to believe it. And so what ends up happening is a young person is forced to choose. He's forced to choose between the science that he can see and the explanations that are clearly reasonable with a response from someone of who appears to speak for the church, who seems to suggest that reason cannot address the questions that he raises. And so one of the things I tell my students is no question is dumb. Every question should be asked.
Amen to that. I agree with that 100%. Father, we need to take one more quick break.
Sure.
Hold on. Excellent. We're talking with Father Nick from Providence College, and we're also here with Mr. Bob LeBlanc, Cindy behind the glass. My name is Paul Morano. You're listening to Beneath the Surface. We're here until 11, so stick around. We'll be right back. And we're back. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to Beneath the Surface, our final segment here. We are here until 11 o'clock. My name is Paul Morano, as usual, and my guest, not as usual, is Father Nick from Providence College, a doctor of philosophy as well as theology, and he is here with us to talk about the topic of evolution and faith. Now, Father, thanks for sticking around.
Sure.
I've got three more questions, and Bob might have one or two, and we only have about 13 minutes, so let's see if we can get them all in.
Okay.
Excellent. So one of my questions is this. What does the biblical account of Eve being created out of Adam say to us?
You notice she's created not from his head, so she's not to dominate him. She's not created from his feet, so she is not to be a slave. She's created from his rib, so they are equal and complementary.
Okay, that's the biggest thing that you think God is communicating to us, that man and woman
are complementary, we are equal,
but different.
And we are meant to be one.
And in that oneness, you need a difference, don't you?
Exactly. So that's why it's complementary, not identical.
Right. We seem to be having a little bit of a problem.
There's confusion
in our culture today on that one.
Yeah.
Are we still evolving?
That's a wonderful question. Yes, probably. Because if you look at evolution as basically the change in our genetic constitution, then there's going to be changes in our genetic constitution no matter what. So we are changed. Now, whether or not we'll evolve into something else, I think that's not going to happen.
Why?
But are we? I'm sorry?
Why are you certain that that's not going to happen?
Well, I think because the big difference for us is that we are rational creatures. Whether or not we are 8 foot tall an 8 foot tall human being who can live 500 years is still a human person. So we can't go into something that is a post person.
Well, could you at least be a rational person in a different kind of body?
We have that already, you know. I mean, we have people who are small. We have people who are big or people who are fat. people who are thin.
But is it possible that God could evolve our species into, for example, having wings so that we could fly and still be persons?
Well, we'd still be persons as long as we had intellect and will.
Right.
You know, whether or not we would have wings to fly, that's difficult because if you look at a bird,
yep.
The bird evolved its wings from what we have as limbs. So we'd have to get rid of our arms and replace those with wings. And I prefer having arms rather than having wings.
It just seems like we're the only species that looks up and wonders.
That's right.
And you would think that perhaps with that, eventually God might use this wonder and looking up to enable us to float or fly without machinery.
Well, I think I always say, look, when we rise from the dead,
yes.
We're going to be able to go anywhere in an instant.
Yes.
So that would be cool.
And that actually leads me to my third question, and that is this. If sin had not occurred, let's bring mm-hmm. us back in the garden. If sin had not mm-hmm. occurred, would we have evolved into that glorified state that occurs after the resurrection?
So I think the theologians, the great theologians and fathers of the church pretty much propose that what would have happened is that after a full life, we would have been assumed into glory in the way that the Mother of God was assumed.
Ah. So most theologians would say that would not be a part of the evolutionary process. We'd have to first go into either a dormition or die and then raise up into something like a caterpillar to a butterfly.
True. And you know what? Even though the church has never definitively said, I actually think the Mother of God died because she would have done what her son did. She loved him that much. And she would have followed through it. And he chose to die. And I think that she would have chosen to die knowing that she would have risen as he rose.
Yeah.
And I think that that's what would have happened. Now, you see, that death presupposed sin, so that would not have happened. It probably would have been that at the end of a full life, a human being in the Garden of Eden would simply have been assumed. There would have been no death. It was time to go.
But as the church teaches, all of creation will be transformed
into a
glorified state. So how would that have worked if sin had not interrupted that process? We'd be assumed into what?
Yeah, so the idea is that the New Jerusalem is a reality where spirit rather than matter dominates.
Yes.
So in our resurrected body, which is the body of the New Jerusalem, our souls will be able to be free of the limits and constraints of our body. So right now, if I decided to, you know, if I wanted to get to your studios, I would have to get my body into a car and drive up an hour and a half.
Mm.
But in the resurrected world, I could simply think about you and I'd be there because my body would now be subject to the spirit in a way it's not. And so in the same way, the resurrected, the new creation, the new Jerusalem will be a world, I think, beyond our imaginings. It will be still a material world, but it'd be a material world where spirit rather than matter dominates. And I have no clue what that would be like. I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah, it seems like the laws of physics as we know them now wouldn't necessarily apply the same way.
Well, the laws of physics describe matter, and so they would still apply to matter, but not matter that has been
glorified.
And so there would be other laws that describe glorified matter. And it's not quite clear if rocks, you know, I think rocks will still behave as rocks.
Yeah.
But persons will be different.
So you picture the next world as being having glorified rocks as well as plants and animals?
I don't think so.
Okay.
I mean, I think it will be transformed. I do not know how it will be transformed. I mean, the Book of Revelation talks about its brilliance. It talks about its beauty. We know it's going to be different. I know that we tend to focus, you know, the church has focused on us. We will be different, and we will be radically different, and Christ shows us the way. We will be like him. We will be able to go through walls like he does. You know, we will be able to do what he can do already.
Right.
Now,
that was shown in the Gospels.
I'm sorry?
That was shown in the Gospels after his resurrection. That
That's
he,
right.
That
he had a glorified
walls.
Body, yeah. And he could do stuff.
Right, right, right. Bob, what do you got?
All right. I'm not sure if this is going to be an easy question. This is something that's bothered me since college. I received, I guess, an understanding of Aristotelian metaphysics. And, and one of the things that actually bothered me about that was it didn't seem to adequately explain evolution. And especially in the sense that I'm trying to think about, when we look at various species, you know, there's something intelligible about them. But I don't think that the Aristotelian philosophy supplies enough explanation of species actually changing over time.
Into another species?
Into another species, yes.
Right, so it's actually striking you bring this up. So I'm in the process of establishing an academic center here at Providence College, and one of the things that we would like to explore, actually, where I just scheduled a meeting for February, is to ask the following disputed question. And the question is the following. If Darwin's theory of evolution, assuming Darwin's theory of evolution is true, is it compatible with a realist metaphysics? And so there's a bunch of Dominicans we're going to gather together here at Providence College with philosophers and theologians and scientists. And we want to deal exactly with that question. You know, there have been objections raised from Aristotelians that evolutionary theory cannot be properly explained using Aristotelian principles of change, especially act and potency with regards to potency for a more perfect nature. And so we would like to think about that. And first of all, we have to actually identify which principles supposedly deny the plausibility of evolution. So that's one of the things we'll be doing. So if you call me up in 6 months, we could have this conversation again. I think that one of the things that we're going to have to do is we need to go back to these principles and ask, what exactly were these principles trying to explain? And could they have imagined the kind of evolving universe that that science presents us with? And if not, where exactly can we tweak the principles so that we will preserve the truth that they hold, as well as enlarge them to explain more than they thought they could explain when Aristotle formulated them?
Well, thank you, Father.
That's something we're working on.
All right, thank you.
And
thank you.
That is a problem relating to individuals in a species that would have accidental change to the point where the very essence of the species would be changed, right?
Well, I think the biggest thing, for example, if something that was blind could give rise to something that had sight,
yeah.
Is that not a violation of the principle in Aristotle that something, you can't give what you don't have?
Okay.
You see that, and I'm simplifying the metaphysics. But if you don't have sight, how can you give it to something that eventually will come from you?
Okay.
And we need to think through that even more.
Very good. This is
well. Thank you.
You've given us a lot.
Hopefully,
to think
this was
about.
Helpful.
Could you give us your website and all that kind of good stuff so we can do some more reading?
Sure. It's ThomisticEvolution.org.
ThomisticEvolution.org.
Mm-hmm.
Father Nicanor
Austriaco.
Austriaco.
Yep.
There he is, ladies
yep.
and gentlemen. Thank you so much, Father, for joining us tonight.
Thank you
service.
Very much for having me on the show.
Thank
God bless you. Good night.
You too. Good night. All right. We've got a couple minutes left. He seems to be a very learned and a very good man.
Yes, and there were a few surprises for me there. It was talking about language as the key point, I guess, for the beginning of mankind. I was thinking of the word, You know, the fact that we have the Word become incarnate. There's a parallel between
language,
man right. speaking and
God speaking.
And God speaking.
Yeah, that's funny. I always thought that language and religion were the two telltale signs that humankind had begun on Earth, you know, through cave paintings and so forth. Because both represent symbolic or non-material thinking.
Right.
Don't they?
Yes.
Language, you need symbolic thought, and so do you with religion.
You need to be able to make something intelligible.
Yes. And the senses, of course, only detect what is physical, concrete particulars in front of us.
Right. And then we discern something out of that. We abstract something out of that point. And
amen.
Yes.
And we're the only species that seems to be doing that.
Right. We're able to look
and
at a picture.
Hence, we're persons and images of God.
Right.
Praise God.
Praise God.
Thank you, everybody, for joining us tonight. Interesting discussion, evolution and faith. My name is Paul Morano. That's Bob. Thank you to Father Nick and Cindy. Stay tuned for Cindy's Vinyl Vaults. Thank you for listening to Beneath the Surface here at WCAP Radio. Good night, everybody.
Breadbox Media Programming is brought to you by Jack Kane Ford. Find your next Ford Tough vehicle at caneford.com. Woodhill Community Center. Have a hand in the heart of the city. Support their mission with your donations at woodhillcommunitycenter.org. Toyota in Nicholasville Superstore. Online consultants are standing by right now to help you find your next Toyota. Visit Toyota on nicholasville.com. Lexus of Lexington, home of the best-selling Lexus IS. Find yours today at lexusoflexington.com.